Okay, welcome to WMFO today. This is Marissa.
This is Jenna.
And this is Edward.
And thank you for joining us today, Edward. So once again to our listeners, you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio, and this is Academics on Air.
And this is our last episode, so enjoy it while you can, and thank you for being a listener. If you are tuning in right now, maybe for the first time, maybe this is your second or third or who knows how many, but we appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you want to contact us about this show or any future ideas, because I might be continuing a little bit of radio this summer, although not in the same vein as Academics on Air, you can email us at academicsonair@gmail.com. So we're going into a show today that is culminating a lot of the topics and the ideas we've been thinking about over the semester, in the sense that Edward, our guest, has attended many lectures on campus and really used the resources that Tufts has to offer as a community member. And additionally, Harvard, you were saying other area resources as well.
Yes, there are so many different, maybe if we just turn down my mic a little bit, because, okay. There are so many great resources in our Boston area. And the absolute first thing I would say is for anybody who's interested in free educational opportunities and low-cost educational opportunities to go to bostonsciencelectures.com. It's an absolutely amazing site. It's run by a retired journalist and author, Fred Hapgood, who wrote the best article that I've ever read on tofu that was in the July 1987 National Geographic magazine. But wow. If you go to the site, maybe we could just go there right now, Marissa.
Okay, I'm searching it up. I'm searching it right now.
And is this so it's kind of like he just aggregates events that are happening in the area and like reports on them and say, hey, there'll be this and such at this location?
Exactly right, Jenna. What Fred basically does is he's got hundreds of different sites that he visits, and he stays on top of those. And the site has basically two parts: the list that's updated weekly, that's kind of this week and next week's, and then at the top, inside the words, he mentions his list of sources. And if you click on that, that's just this list of hundreds of different academic and scientific and other organizations. And then next to each one of them is their list of individual events. So that you could just go there and spend hours checking them all out.
Can you say the name of the site one more time?
Yes, bostonsciencelectures.com. And I think if you were just type in Boston Science Lectures, that would be
Google
the number one hit. And okay, there we're going.
We're going. Okay, it might load in a second and we can tell you. Oh, here we go. Yeah.
And so, yeah, if we scroll down, we'll see for tomorrow there are 13 events. Mm. And the day after, on Tuesday, there's 14 events. And this is actually the slow season. Right now is actually, unfortunately, as we're doing the show, probably the worst time of year to get into this, because it's basically September through May that lots of things are going on.
The traditional academic year.
And I'm curious, from your experience of this site, are all of the events university based, or are there also not events that are not tied to universities?
Yes, many events are not tied at all to universities. Things like the Museum of Science, things like hospitals that have research things. So yeah, he tried. But the one thing to mention about that is he does have very much a science kind of focus. So if you're interested in other more art and cultural events, that's not the website for that. But on the other hand, it can be a great jumping off point, because he has links to many universities' more general sites. And so just like that would be the other thing to mention specifically for us here. Tufts has a site, events.tufts.edu. And that's a great place for us living around here at Tufts.
Mm. Absolutely.
I think maybe now would be a good point. I think maybe we're going to play a song, and then we can jump into like how you've developed your relationship with Tufts, the surrounding community, and I guess the greater Boston community, in terms of education experiences.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're just a mother breaking the wall.
Okay, you were just listening to Pink Floyd with Another Brick in the Wall, parts 1 and 2, and loosely playing into our theme of education for the day. So we are back to some chatting, and we wanted to talk with Edward about the experience of moving into the Somerville community. And how long ago was that you moved in?
So it was 1998 that I bought a house on Conwell Avenue with my wife and moved here. And I would sure say I had a different attitude about Tufts and what the university was at the time. And I first really didn't appreciate it. And what I knew more was that there was students who lived around here. In particular, there was a frat house that was three doors down, Sig Phi Epp. And I remember discovering the night when I discovered it was a frat house, because I went over there to talk to them, and then some realizations exactly what the neighborhood was about set in. And at certain points, things, relations between the university and neighbors were different. And to work towards making things better, around the year 2000, I joined with a bunch of other neighbors, and we founded what ultimately became the West Somerville Neighborhood Association. And one of the things that we were really trying to do there was to encourage communication between Tufts students who moved off campus and their neighbors, and we published a brochure and we go around. And I think that to many degrees has worked a lot. And more particularly in recent, the last 2 years, working on the housing problem with the Tufts Housing League and the students involved in that, like Nate Krinsky and Shane Woolley and Anne Marie Lee and Jonah. And so I've been pretty involved with that. But we probably want to talk about some of the educational opportunities that are there. And well, Marissa, you're at the environmental studies lunch talks.
I am. So I go to those not quite every week, but I've really enjoyed them. And I know that you are a very dedicated attendee of those. And also, I've seen you at the science and technology studies lunch series. Can you tell me how many different regularly occurring event series you attend?
So those two, I've discovered, first the environmental lunch series that's on every Thursday during the academic year. And that I first learned about a year and a half ago. And just that concept of here, a department that is passionate, the professors, Colin and Sarah and Ninian, they're obviously very passionate about the field that they're in. And to bring in both speakers from the Tufts community, professors and people from off, and to make this available to everybody. I mean, you just need to know about this event. And then on Thursday at noontime, go down to that Curtis multi-purpose room, show up and get your free vegetarian lunch and enjoy the talk. And that's just an incredible thing, with just show up and get a truly free lunch while attending somebody who generally is passionate and knows what they're talking about. Yeah. And then on Fridays, there are kind of the same deal, but in a different way, with the science and technology and society studies talk. And again, basically same deal, noontime over in Sophia Gordon Hall, free vegetarian lunch, and a speaker who's passionate about what it is they're going to be talking about.
Absolutely.
I'm kind of curious, and this doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to limit this in terms of like these two programs, but has there been a particular event or speaker that you've really like has resonated with you or kind of stuck with you?
One of the early environmental studies lunches that I attended was with a Palestinian and Israeli youth organization. And what they were basically dealing was with water resources. And they had these Israeli high school students and these Palestinian high school students working together on this project. And they were talking about how when their friends, like the Israeli friends found out that they were working on that, they were like, how can you be working with those terrorists? And they would, like, friendships were lost. And in the same way, the Palestinian kids were like, how could you be working with those people who are oppressing us all? And the stories that they had talking about how they were dealing with those issues as well as the problems they were trying to solve, those I really remembered.
I like how you're bringing up the intersectionality of many disciplines and a very political and geographical environmental studies lunch and learn that also is at its core environmental. And so thinking about these issues from when you get a range of speakers coming in and talking about environmental issues, you can see how many intersections there are with politics, with social things, with, you know, every other discipline.
Another series that I would highly recommend is over at Harvard Law School, their Berkman Klein Center for the Study of Internet and Society. It's a lot like the Tufts STS program in what it's generally doing, but you know, they have really top-notch people who are coming there, and they've just got great speakers. Their talks are generally on Tuesdays during the academic year with the free lunch deal, but they also have talks on Mondays and Wednesdays, and then they have other events at different, like, 5 p.m. and sometimes 7 p.m. But yeah, that's Harvard Law School's Berkman Klein Center, and that's just an outstanding Tuesday lunch series as well.
I'm kind of curious. So you said you moved here mid-late 80s?
1998,
sorry. late 90s. So since then, just like, how do you think, I guess, I mean, both getting involved with like kind of activism and the West Somerville Coalition, but how else do you think your relationship has like developed or changed with Tufts?
Well, certainly one thing that's a real jewel is WMFO here. And the fact that I'm not sure how many of our listeners know about how this exactly works with us being community radio, but essentially this is something that Tufts offers to students, and any student can join the organization. And incredibly generously, Tufts also makes it so community members. And the fact that somebody like me could just essentially walk in off the street and get a show and be able to do whatever you know you want within these FCC rules is amazing. And in that same way, you know, something like with WERS, which is one of our sister stations, non-commercial radio, and a lot of people who want to learn broadcasting go there. It's a great school and a great station. But you go to WERS and you want to get a radio show, sure, you can get one. You sign up for one of the already existing shows and you follow exactly the format that they're doing, and that's how you get on the radio. Here, Marissa, you're an outstanding example of having a couple of ideas during your two-year being a WMFO DJ and trying out a bunch of different shows. Sometimes even it's just like, you know, one, oh, I'm trying this out and the concept didn't work, so I'm actually going to do something else for my show. But you couldn't do that at WERS.
I do really enjoy that flexibility. Jenna and I started this show this year or this semester? When did we start
it? When we started it?
At the beginning of
this semester, yeah.
Okay. and it's been, I think it's been a huge success, but it was just a seed of an idea, you know, in January. So really exciting to see that take shape.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I definitely think when I started my radio show 2.5, almost maybe 3 years ago, I can't remember which semester, I was kind of like daunted. I mean, we had our training, obviously, so I knew the basics, but I think it was also kind of a challenge, but like a welcome challenge to just kind of have free reign of this. It wasn't like anyone was telling me, okay, you need to press this button then, and this is what you're going to say. It's really kind of like you crafting something of your own.
Yeah.
Edward, am I correct in thinking that you have two radio shows that alternate?
Yes, and I got this idea from Joanne Kesey, the way I came to WMFO was I first became a fan of it in 2001 from just driving around a lot and switching through different radio stations. And there was an AC/DC song that was playing, and it was an obscure one. It wasn't one of the more popular ones. So when it came out, I stayed with the station. And then another song that was not an incredibly terribly commercial success that came on, but it was a good one. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go and lock this station in. And so I was listening to it that way. And then in the summer of 2004, I was out in my backyard, and I was talking to the Tufts student who was living behind me. And I found out that he was a DJ on WMFO. And not only was he a DJ, but he happened to be the DJ for a show that I was listening to regularly on Thursday nights.
What are the odds?
So we had a lot of things in common because I loved the music that he had. And not only that, he was the general manager of the station.
That's a great in. So was it in 2004 that you first started DJing?
Yeah, he invited me to come in and be a guest on his show, and I prepared a playlist and had all that, and he was like, you know, we have community members, you could have your own show. And first I was like, that'd be too much of a responsibility. And then I warmed up to it, and it's becoming a very important part of my life.
That's great.
Cool. I think this might be a good place to segue into a song, and then we can decide if we want to continue with this conversation or pivot a little bit.
And may I ask, would you be able to put on some music that you have mixed and that you like playing on your show, or we can also play another song first if you'd like?
No, that would be a great one, a great idea. And I do, let me over to
and just while you're getting that set up, I was going to say that I just came back from a road trip to Western Massachusetts this weekend, and when we were driving through Williams College, I'm not in a car that often, so I don't have access to a physical radio that often, and I said to the person, my friend driving, I'm going to look up what station Williams College radio is, and let's try listening to that. And we found, just when we tuned in, there were two songs I'd never heard before that I really enjoyed, and then the DJ came out on and was talking about some faculty politics happening at Williams, and so it was a perfect, like, 5-minute example, vignette of what the beauty that college radio can be, and in, you know, connecting issues of what's happening in the community, what's happening on campus, broadcasting music that is maybe under-popularized in other contexts. So it was really exciting. I hope that listeners out there are getting the same thing from WMFO.
So this coming to us on AUX 2 is Miles Davis, the Pan Piper, with the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman talking about the size of atoms.
Quantum mechanics has several aspects. In the first place, the idea that a particle has a definite location and a definite speed is no longer allowed. That's wrong. And to give a measure of how wrong classical physics is, there's a rule that says that you can't both know where something is and how fast it's moving. The uncertainty in the momentum of it and the uncertainty in the position complementary. The product of the two is a constant. If you want the law, if you like the right equations, you can write this. Explain it some other time in more detail. This is the explanation of a very mysterious paradox. If the atoms are made out of plus and minus charges, why don't the minus charges simply sit on top of the plus charges? They attract each other. Why don't they just sit there on top? Why is our atom so big? Why, if there is a nucleus here and the electrons around? We first was thought that it was because the nucleus was big. No. The nucleus is very small. The atom in its diameter here is 10 to the minus 8 centimeters. The nucleus in its diameter is of the order 10 to the minus 13 centimeters. What does that mean? That means that if you had an atom and you wanted to see the nucleus, you'd have to expand it, magnify it, till the whole atom is the size of this room, and then the nucleus is a bare speck that you can just about make out with the eye, a hundredth of an inch or more. And all the weight of the atom is in that nucleus. What keeps the electrons from simply falling in? This principle. If they sat there, then you'd know where they were and that they weren't moving. And you can't have that. So they don't sit there, because if you try to put them there, they start moving around. Well, they move around and they take a compromise. They leave themselves a little room for this uncertainty, and they jiggle at a certain amount of minimum motion given by this rule. You remember also that when a crystal is cooled to absolute zero, the atoms do not stop moving, they still jiggle. Why? Because if they stopped moving, you'd know where they were and that they were at zero motion. And that's against the uncertainty principle. You're not supposed to know where they are and how fast they're moving, so they continually wiggle in there.
Okay, can you tell us what that was again, Edward?
Yes, that was Miles Davis and the Pan Piper. And what I did there was I overlaid an excerpt from a lecture by Richard Feynman, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist, talking about the relative size of atoms. And I think if there was anything to really get out about that, it was the way scientists thought atoms were has really changed. And if we're going to go and understand the size of an atom right now, let's go and take a big lecture hall. That's where the atoms are orbiting out. And then we'll go way into the center, and about the size of a human hair, that's the nucleus. So there's an order of 10 to the 5 difference. And wow, that's a lot different from the nucleus with the atoms spinning around at pictures that we see.
That reminds me of a really interesting video I've seen. It's called Power of 10. And it starts off with this, like, it takes place in Chicago. So it's these people, like, just sitting near Lake Michigan. And then it keeps going out by powers of 10. And then it comes back to the people and goes in by powers of 10. And so you get to see kind of the two extremes of the universe in terms of, like, far, like, near the edges of our galaxy to, like, the inside of, like, the nuclei.
You're absolutely right, Jenna. I've seen that too. It's amazing. And just to go and find that and experience it a couple of times, now that you've mentioned it, I'm going to go home and I'm going to look at that again, because that's just a wow kind of thing. And I think maybe also talking about wow kinds of things and educational, traveling around the world, I think, can truly be an educational, life-changing thing to do. And I've really been privileged in life. My background, basically, when I was in college, I was interested in engineering and computer programming, but I was also interested in artificial intelligence, and I decided to get degrees in both computer science and philosophy. And then when I graduated, my first job was working for the military-industrial complex, Grumman Aircraft Systems, out on Long Island. And that, I learned an awful lot. I worked on some projects for the Navy and for NASA. And then I ended up really getting into programming graphical user interfaces, which were kind of getting hot at the time in the 1980s. And I moved up here and I joined a couple of startups. And so I've been an entrepreneur. I've co-founded with a partner, a company. And a bunch of technology startups. And one of the things was that my work life has had a lot of gaps in it. because I'd end up working really hard for a company and then it would go under because that's what most startups do. And I would have some time off. And I'd say another thing that's been, I'm very appreciative to my parents for, was bringing us up in a frugal lifestyle. So so saving money so that when you don't have a job that it's not a thing to panic about. And, you know, honestly, technology has in the past paid pretty well. So I would have this like time off after being really burnt out. And I would find a two or three countries in Asia that I hadn't been to before, and I buy a plane ticket and have the Lonely Planet guides, and then I'd land there, and then for a couple of weeks I'd make my way around. And I think traveling on a budget, I think if you spend a lot of money traveling, if you are staying in nice hotels, you're not going to get the experience. And I think really trying to get the experience of what these places are. So I've been fortunate to visit Japan and India and Vietnam and Korea and Indonesia and China and Hong Kong and Thailand and Singapore and Malaysia. And the thing that has really truly affected me has been seeing poverty. Like, I remember being in India and in Mumbai, just seeing miles of these slums. It's kind of house-like things, but they're not really houses. People have taken trash and corrugated metal and they're putting them up, and that's where they're living inside. But on the other hand, for all that poverty that's there, it's also a place that it's warm enough to live the whole year. And I think that that's a kind of contrast too. When you're in the freezing cold, that's one thing. But say Bali, Indonesia, there's a lot of tourists there, but it's really an island paradise, and food is pretty inexpensive there. And you could see being a sort of like Western person as we are, saving up a bunch of money and just living there for months on, you know, $20 a day. Yeah, you could do that. And when you're in an island paradise, I think that really, for me at least, that's really made me think about things. But also, like, I remember in India wandering around, I'd always bring things to give kids, not candy, but little playthings. And coming across a village where there were a lot of these untouchable children, and pretty much even poor people have, the women have a gold nose ring or something like this, but this girl was so poor, all she had was a piece of copper wire that was stuck through her nose and bent around there. And seeing people living like that, but on the other hand, being happy too, that's some of the things that have really affected me that way.
So how have your travels connected to the way in which you continue to engage with learning here in Massachusetts? You know, what have you attended events here that you've thought, wow, you know, this is really informed by the fact that I have seen this part of the world or have had this travel experience?
Or maybe even the other way around, in terms of like you went to an event and it inspired you perhaps to go somewhere.
Well, one of the things that I've seen is here at Tufts, in terms of being international, it's just great that there's so many students from different countries. And I think this was where I met you, over at the Tufts Open Call.
Yes.
And so that was basically something that there were several people responsible for it, but I would give the most credit to Quinn, who was he's from Vietnam, and that's where he is right now, but just a real fired up, high energy guy. But him and some of the other people with this idea of, let's go and have these social events that we'll invite people to. They'll be like parties, except there won't be alcohol there, and we're gonna try to go through these crazy, trippy kind of exercises to get people talking and knowing each other. And that I found out about the first event from events.tufts.edu, and it was about an event where people were going to be smelling things that evening. And it's just like, what? We're going to be having a smelly party or something like that?
And I loved that those events were held in Dowling Hall, which is typically on campus, this admissions building, this very much pass-through building that's on the top of the
parking garage.
The parking garage, thank you. And really not a space where I see people pause and smell something intentionally, or like like hug someone really meaningfully, or these types of activities that this open call event was trying to stimulate. So it was a good contrast and really reclaiming that space. And not something that I saw that many community members at besides yourself. And so again, a case where I'm really curious about how you, in your interactions with other community members, how you think other community members could know about or get involved more with these types of things that you find almost naturally, that you're always looking out for.
I would say there certainly are people like who get more involved and are more open to the idea of university and having events. I think I think WMFO is a really good example. The community members who are involved with that, I think that it can definitely be difficult for a lot of people who don't step foot on campus to understand and get involved. Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough question, because I try to do that. I try to go and tell my neighbors, ooh, there's this really cool thing that you should go to. But then when I send them, you know, an invitation, and it's to the Bug Fest, sponsored by
Edible Insect Festival.
Right. I mean, I thought it was great. I sent the pictures, and I said, come on, it'll be fun. but not too many people were psyched about that.
I also heard many students who were not psyched about it, but some on the other side who were very interested. So, and that's a whole nother environmental topic, thinking about bugs and bug protein as a protein of the future with limited resources and land use and stuff like that.
I think one thing that, in terms of having an environmentally conscious lifestyle, but, you know, if there could be like some criticisms that I have of people in general, it's maybe spending too much money on things. And, you know, when I was talking about being able to travel around the world, one opportunity that I had at a certain point was working for Lotus, the software company, on their 1-2-3 spreadsheet. And basically, the product was kind of late, and they needed people with very specialized skills. And for various reasons, I had those skills. And so they were willing to pay me and some other people a lot of money to get this product out. And a lot of my colleagues kind of saw the money that they were getting, and they were like, woohoo, and they elevated their lifestyle up to basically spending the incredible amounts of money that they were at that time getting, versus saving that money and realizing that the good times don't last, and instead kind of being prepared that way. And then also living economically. That's one of the things that I've learned, I think, from the environmental studies program. But it's also part, you know, I was thanking my parents for bringing me up frugally. And I think that that's just the right way to live. I think, you know, it's difficult because things cost so much money. But the devices that we have, when things break, there's never been a better time in certain ways to figure out how to fix things by going and looking on the internet. And it's a terrible tragedy that a lot of the devices that we have that are the most advanced pieces of technology that humans have made come with these batteries that absolutely will degrade in 2 years, and in 5 years the devices are completely unusable because the batteries will self-destruct and explode. But you can't open up the devices to go and change that. But they're, you know, they're incredible devices that way. And then I think another thing with people could say that you're pursuing being economical too much, but I had like a pair of running tights, and the seams split after a while of use. And so I went and on Amazon and I looked for a new pair, and they were like $80, and that was pretty expensive. But I bought them anyway. But then I had the old pair, and I thought, well, you know, it's just the sides that are splitting there. I could get a needle and thread and repair them. And so I had the new ones coming, but I said, I'm gonna go and repair these old ones. And I did. And then I got like another 6 months out of them. And then it was springtime and I didn't need them. So I washed them and I put them. And then the next year I'm like, well, I got the new ones and I got the old ones, but the new ones. So I wore them the same split, but now I knew how to repair them. And it took like 7 minutes, which is less time than it would take to go to Amazon, find a new pair and order them, never mind spending the $80 for them. So that's just the kind of example with, you know, saving, being able to repair things. Often it can be not just way less expensive than buying a new one, but it's faster.
And I think we live in a time where a lot of people are thinking about convenience and speed and, you know, I want it now so much. But it's really good to put it in that perspective of sometimes the more environmental option or reusing something, it could compete with the Amazon option in terms of speed. And that's something that I've learned a lot from my environmental studies courses is fighting against planned obsolescence that we're seeing more and more in products where they're just designed to be replaced. And also, I would say some of the best learning I've done at Tufts this year has been from my housemates who are very minded to be using things through their lifetime and be repairing things. And so I've had a lot of good learning opportunities about how to mend and reuse items.
I have many thoughts about planned obsolescence, but that I don't know if we have time for all of them. But I did want to say, you were mentioning your parents were the ones that taught you to be frugal, and I just wanted to, I think, hopefully my mom's listening, but I wanted to say Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day,
to everyone's moms and grandmoms, those that are with us, and unfortunately those that are no longer with us as well. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate you and all you do.
Shout out to the moms. I'm going to transition into a song, and I was just going to say thank you, Edward, for bringing up that topic of budgeting. I think that's especially relevant to the students who are still on campus now who are largely seniors. And
I think it's relevant to students who are freshmen as well, too. Definitely.
Very good point.
At every stage in your life.
And I think that there are some ways in which being a student across my 4 years here, I did learn about budgeting and I learned more about that. But I also think there's still a bit of a bubble around my finances that I haven't had to expand into really managing everything yet. And so it's something I'm going to be learning, and I appreciate you talking a bit about it. And so just in the spirit of this being the week before graduation on campus, graduation is next Sunday, May 19th, I'm going to put on a classic Alice Cooper song. Okay, we are listening to the song Kids from the Stranger Things album soundtrack. And I think it's some good background music, so going to go into a public service announcement. So speaking of a town and gown relationship, this one is connected. Thinking of throwing a house party? Well, if you are part of the Somerville or Medford communities, then it is imperative that you are a responsible host. As a host, you can help maintain community relations by controlling the noise and behavior of your guests. It is also important to provide snacks and non-alcoholic beverages for your guests and to remind guests to alternate alcoholic and non-alcoholic beverages. Finally, remember it is illegal to provide alcohol to individuals who are under 21 years old. Such behavior can lead to a fine of up to $2,000 as well as a year in jail. The serious stuff. This message was brought to you by Somerville Cares About Prevention. Find us online on Facebook, Twitter, and www.somervillema.gov/SCAP. So I think a general rule of maintaining that positive relationship and the really fruitful relationship that can happen between community and college, and as has been evidenced by the direction of, you know, community members engaging with on-campus resources, and then also, you know, thinking about giving back and what students can be very mindful of in the other direction.
Mm-hmm. A Tufts Daily reporter asked me a couple of weeks ago, what makes good neighbors from both the residents and the student perspective? And I said, from a resident perspective, it would be some students who are having a party and they print up an announcement of the party with their name and phone number, and they put it in the mailboxes of the houses all around them. And because the neighbors really appreciate getting a heads up. I know that it happens if I get surprised about a party that's really loud. If I know it's going to happen, then I get in a psychological mood. And then plus, if it's really too loud for me, having the phone number right there, that's just okay. I'm going to call the phone number and we're going to resolve this without the police. And then on the flip side, I think from the student's perspective, exactly that same thing. Some students who ended up moving in and they had that party and they made sure their phone number was available to the neighbors. And the neighbor happens to notice that it's a street sweeping day and that their neighbor, the student's car, is parked out on the street. Well, he's got their phone number. He gives them a call and says, hey, you better go and move your car right now to go and save that $40 fine. So those are two, you know, it starts off with the students going and giving the phone number so they have it. And one thing that I think has regrettably happened in the last couple of years is that students no longer put their names on doorbells, and there aren't even doorbells anymore in many mm-hmm. cases, because with people coming over, it's like you're going to call people. So when somebody wants to ring your doorbell, if they don't know you, they don't have a way to do that. And that, unfortunately, I think just encourages people resorting to the police to resolve things rather than doing things more neighborly. So if people are able to, you know, make introductions and exchange email addresses and phone numbers, that just makes things go so much more smoothly.
Absolutely. I definitely think that is something I wish more Tufts students kept in mind, is that we do not live in a bubble here. You know, this community was here before us. I assume will maybe last longer than the institution. I don't know. but I think it's just, we need to, you know, that we are not, it's not just us. There are people that, you know, have their lives here, and we're kind of just kind of a transient population in a way. So we need to be mindful of that. But also, I think it can be worthwhile to get to know the people you live around. I think you can, it could be beneficial both, you know, for the students and the people living around you, but also just, you know, just good neighborly, just people to know and learn more about. I think that's important too.
I think a lot of the, in terms of people having similar interests, I think over the last few years in particular, a lot of the students and the faculty and the neighbors have realized that they're very much in common cause with things like getting an additional dormitory built. And if there's anything more, it's that the Tufts administration is something that the students and the neighbors and the faculty are more united against.
Kind of a common antagonist in a way. Or maybe antagonist isn't the right word, but just like a common...
We want to be careful about exactly what we say there, but I think that the administration has made certain decisions, particularly in regard to not building a new dormitory, but instead focusing on the academic buildings, that it is not for the good.
And hopefully with a lot of building activism, we'll see some shifts in that in the next few years, so... We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So we are entering into the last bit of our final show of Academics on Air. And it's been a great semester, and I'm very excited to end it where we are here. So, Jenna, did you have a specific question for Edward relating to that?
I don't know if I have a question. I don't know. I'm just kind of reflecting on both this conversation and my time at Tufts, and I think what one of the things I'll really miss is just the freedom... Or the flexibility to like just go walking around on campus and pop in to different events, whether that be something as the Environmental Lunch and Learn series or, you know, a politician who comes on campus. I think there's always something to do here. And, you know, that's probably true of most places, but I feel like it's so concentrated on a college campus. And so I'll really miss just being able to kind of diversity of just I don't know, interests I can explore here and things I didn't know about, and things that maybe I wouldn't have otherwise thought to explore more. I think I'm gonna miss just like having that in such a within like a mile. So yeah,
I think the freedom is a very important thing as Americans. We kind of jump on that, but there are very specific decisions that you can make in life to be more free or less free. And sometimes I think people jump on certain responsibilities and they don't realize what they entail. Now, we're all thankful for our moms, but I'd say, you know, having kids, that's just something that I know from my friends that radically changes your life. And in terms of having the time to do things, like you were talking about with all of the things that are going on campus and everything, wow, having a baby just radically changes that. And it's, you know, if that's what you want to do, sure, go ahead. But don't undertake that decision lightly.
Hmm. And I've really thought about the next few steps for me in terms of where I want to be living and how that will shape my experience of a community. And I have really thought about wanting to live near a university in the future. And I don't know if, I mean, maybe I do want to pause, you know, a bit of a reprieve or a pause from this type of environment, but I really want to be engaging with the wealth of Boston area universities moving forward. And that's regarding your question of, you know, not wanting to leave this one square mile of events and happenings.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I too am kind of hoping for a reprieve, but also wanting to be, you know, there's a lot to do in Chicago. There's a lot of universities there too. So I'm also looking forward to taking advantage of kind of a new academic type environment.
And also I want to respond to what I just said, because as it was coming out, I was realizing that you said a really valuable thing off air at the beginning of this hour, Jenna, about the elitist perspective of, oh, there's so much to do right here. But there's also so much to do that's not tied to universities.
Yes.
And I
should probably emphasize that
Well. Yeah, I think my perspective in saying, wow, great resources at the university, is that I've seen over my time here that a lot of students who are going to be in the space for 4 years, I don't think some students take advantage of those resources as much as I try to, or I wish everyone did. And so that's why I'm so in that mindset of, hey, everyone, look at these great resources at the university. But yeah, let's talk more about things that aren't, that are just out there in the world, and travel and community activities and stuff.
I think on a very similar note, I think it's easy, I said this before, to get caught in the Tufts bubble. And there are so many other events out there, whether that be in the Somerville or Medford communities or just the greater Boston community, that again might not necessarily be linked to an academic institution, that I feel like Tufts students might not take advantage as much as they should have, whether that be convenience or kind of just ignorance or something else. But yeah.
Should we
start to wrap things up?
Sure, let's wrap things up a little bit. I'm going to give the station ID. So this is Academics on Air, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thank you so much, Edward, for being our guest. And anything else you'd like to mention briefly or talk about?
Well, thanks so much for having me on your final show here. I think you had a great concept with it, and it's a testament to, you know, freeform radio, and it's just been a wonderful experience. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you to all of our listeners for this experience that has been Academics on Air this semester. We're going to circle back to Pink Floyd that we listened to at the beginning of the show with a song that Jenna suggested.
Yes.